Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan, brought to you by our friends, the law firm Condorian Murad.
We are exclusively sponsored by that law firm, Condorian Murad. Estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration. Their attorneys are always there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a free consultation with their team today by visiting kmlawyers.com. Be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
Coming up at 4:30, Eric Flack of Channel 9, award-winning reporter. He's been all over the stadium story in D.C. with the Commanders. Yesterday was the final day of hearings. In fact, team president Mark Klaus testified, I guess is the word, got grilled by, answered questions from the city council for 6 hours. I think there was like a 10-minute break in there. Otherwise, 6 straight hours of just answering questions about the stadium deal as they try to get something finished. There's a vote tomorrow. We'll ask Eric Flack about that vote. Are there going to be 8 yeses to move this thing forward? And then there's a second vote, if it goes through, on September 17th before things go to Congress. What happens then? We'll ask Flack those questions coming up in 25 minutes. But it is time for your Beltway Blitz. We'll cover the NFL as well as the Commanders who are in Richmond at camp this week. Let's start things off on the diamond. Major League Baseball trade deadline. Our friend Chelsea Janes of the Washington Post joins us. Chelsea, why don't we start locally here with the Nats? Mike DiBartolo, as expected, is doing what you think he should probably, which is, hey, if it's a guy that's a free agent at the end of the year, flip him for some minor league talent. Do you think they go bigger than that with Nathaniel Lowe under contract next year or the big fella, Mackenzie Gore, and trade him today?
You know, I don't see Gore going, even though I think there's a really good argument for it at this point in their process. I just think it's too big of a move to make with an interim GM, even if this is the guy who's going to probably be the GM. You know, Lowe, I think if they have takers, they will and should sell on, you know, the first base market. You know, we haven't seen Ryan O'Hearn go either, so I'm not quite sure where that sits right now. But, you know, I think on Lowe, at least, if there's anyone interested, they should make that move.
Chelsea, we've heard what you just said a lot, talking about, yeah, it's an interim GM, you may not have him make the move. Is that a... That's from an ownership perspective? Is it just because an interim tag in general doesn't give you the right to trade a big high-profile player? I'm just sort of curious. Walk us through that.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I think it's a kind of an assumption based on what I think a lot of people are thinking, but no one has said explicitly. Mm-hmm. But, you know, from my perspective, I think the Learners are, you know, the kind of group that probably doesn't care too much what you do with Alex Call, with all due respect, but would want to have a talk about Mackenzie Gore. And they're slow decision makers. And, you know, they're very deliberate with this. And I just have a really hard time, you know, seeing them trusting someone new with a move that big right now. But I could be wrong. But, you know, I think they'd probably feel better if they've made the decision on who's going to have that job long term and they let them decide what to do with him.
Even though DiBartolo probably sticks to your point.
Right.
Yeah, it's going to be.
Of course.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to trade him, so I'd assume they won't do it. Chelsea Janes of the Post with us here on Grant and Danny. All right, so let's go outside the Nats and talk about all things national baseball trade deadline here. Just as you were coming on the air, Jeff Passan reported that Carlos Correa of the Twins is being traded back to the Astros. So a homecoming for him, 6-year, $200 million contract. So Houston's going to take on some money there. I mean, that's a pretty huge deal. How would you consider today's deadline into the last few days to stack up here? It was a slow start, but it seems like things have been hot and heavy.
Yeah, this has been pretty lit, for lack of a better term. I mean, the Correa deal is unbelievable. I can't still kind of reeling from that. Yeah, I think it's been really interesting. You know, I think that teams who are going for it have really gone for it. And AJ Preller did his thing again and shook everything up. And, you know, I would imagine there's still a bunch of starters to come. So I think by any measure, this has been a really, really interesting one and probably will continue to be.
As the dust all settles here, it's hard to tell because we don't know who's traded for whom or whatever pronoun or preposition I'm supposed to use in the right spot there. But how many real contenders are there? I mean, I'm having so much fun with Milwaukee. I think Detroit's been a great story. It's really cool. Do I really believe it?
Yep. That's such a great question. You know, I think what you're looking at is, you know, there's certainly some teams who believe they're real contenders, and that's the Mets, the Phillies, the Padres. I mean, the Dodgers haven't made a big move, but obviously they're there. I think in the American League, the Mariners have said, we're in here. You know, the Yankees certainly have. But, you know, the Brewers have been quiet. If I'm not mistaken, I don't think they've made a move today or yesterday, maybe. And the Tigers, you know, they've gotten a lot of relief help, and they got Chris Paddock, but, like, nothing that really changes their fortunes dramatically, I would say. So, you know, I think it's still the big guys, as it always is. you know, maybe Detroit will make a big move, maybe Milwaukee will make a big move, but I just think that you really feel the stars in the playoffs, and I think the teams that can spend for them are the ones that get to the World Series, and the ones who can't are the ones who, you know, fall just short, and it kind of looks to be setting up that way again.
You mentioned A.J. Preller. He, of course, is the fellow who traded the Nationals, Abrams and Gore and Susana and James Wood and Robert Hassel for Soto. They traded the number 3 overall prospect in baseball today, albeit a teenager who's in single A. They got Mason Miller back, controllable closer through 2030, who's been an all-star and strikes out 12 per 9, and a back-end starting pitcher. What did you make of that deal? Did you have any issue with it from San Diego's standpoint?
No, I thought it was classic Preller. I think they're operating on a little bit of a tighter payroll than they have been in recent years, and they needed to find, you know, ways to deal with that. Now, I thought that that deal meant they would trade Dylan Cease and Robert Suarez, both of whom were on big contracts. It seems like the people who know that organization better are saying probably not Suarez and maybe not Cease. So in that case, it's like, whoa, I thought maybe you're making that move to get two guys that are cheaper to replace the guys that are more expensive and help yourself that way. If you're keeping everybody, it's insane, but it's insane in a way that you kind of wish all teams would be insane, which is they're just trying to win and they're trying to do it now. And, you know, it doesn't matter what the 19-year-old is doing in 5 years. Like, we want a title now. So it's insane in all the right ways, I think, but it'll be a fascinating thing to watch play out even in the next few hours, I think.
Chelsea, how is the labor management discord that's brewing and bubbling to come to a head December 1st, 2026? Is that kind of casting a shadow over you know, things this year, or is it sort of off kind of back of the mind?
I think it's starting to. You know, we saw those reports from earlier this week, and I've now heard people tell me the same thing about Bryce. You know, Bryce Harper yelling at Rob Manfred and saying, "Don't come in here if you're going to talk about a salary cap." I mean, it's tense out there, and I think it's gotten to the point where the feeling about a lockout coming is so assumed. It's such a kind of fait accompli in baseball right now that it can't help but overshadow things. And at the same time, we're having this incredible deadline, you know, a fascinating season. You know, the game looks better with the pitch clock. It's two kind of competing trajectories right now with off the field and on. And I think, you know, it's going to be interesting to watch how that plays out. I don't think the labor stuff is affecting this deadline per se. I think we'll see it a lot in free agency when guys start building contracts around that year, anticipating, you know, the loss of games. But, you know, it's a huge shadow, and it's unfortunately one that I don't necessarily think needs to be there if everyone could kind of work together a little better than they usually do.
That would be nice. Chelsea, thank you. We appreciate you. We know you're busy.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You got it. Enjoy the next couple hours ahead of the deadline. All right, let's keep it moving. Mike Jones of The Athletic covers the National Football League. Mike, I want to start with the NFC North. Do you view the Lions without Ben Johnson and some of the pieces that they lost this offseason as coming back to the pack? Or do you still think they're a head and shoulders favorite in that division on paper?
I don't have them being head and shoulders just because of the growing pains that they could go through. It's not just Ben Johnson. It's also losing Aaron Glenn, their defensive coordinator. Yes, they still have Dan Campbell, and it's his show. But I think that they're probably, you know, could come down a little bit. Obviously, they still have a lot of talent on that roster. But, you know, we'll see if they get off to a slow start as they work out the kinks and get acclimated to new leaders of their, you know, both sides of their ball. But I think that it'll be a little closer as far as the Packers. I think they are going to be good this year. I don't know about the Vikings. They might come down to earth a little bit as J.J. McCarthy feels his way along. The Lions should still be in the mix for that, but I just don't think that they're head and shoulders better now.
I want to stay in the same division, Mike, about the Bears, Ben Johnson's new destination. I like what they're doing. I like them a lot better. I think they'll be improved. I still think they're fourth place in that division, though. It's a buzzsaw.
No, I agree with you. I think so, too, because, I mean, look, they have improved the offensive line. Obviously, they've given Caleb Williams a really good offensive mind in Ben Johnson, but it's going to take a little bit for him to get used to it. And Ben Johnson's real challenge is getting Caleb Williams to play with better decision-making and not playing hero ball. He's so used to being in college where he could sprint to one side of the field and back to the other side and then make a pass. Like, you can't do that in the NFL. You got to, you know, get the ball to your hands quickly. Sometimes learn that the best decision is to throw the ball away. And so, you know, it'll be a learning adjustment for him. But I think that, you know, they'll be improved, but again, they're not better than the Lions, they're not better than the Packers, and they're probably not better than the Vikings either.
Interesting. I want to come back to that. But question about the Trey Hendrickson hold-in. So Terry McLaurin showed up. You were there, actually, I think, his first day at practice with Washington. And he's got this mystery ankle thing that'll get better as soon as he gets paid. But at least for now, he's able to be on PUP, and it gives him some ability to stay off the field for a really long time. Trey Hendrickson's not suggesting that he's hurt. He's just saying that he's not practicing till he gets paid. What do you make of the difference of those two hold-ins?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're basically the same thing to me. I mean, he's saying that he's got this ankle thing, but like you said, I think as soon as he gets paid, it'll be a day, and then he's, you know, activated from that, and, you know, he'll be back on there. I think both of these guys, they tried to hold out, but when you're getting fined $50,000 a day, it gets kind of expensive, and so you're like, all right, I'm going to report. I'm going to be here, but I'm also not going to be on the field. And so it's almost, to me, I think it's almost worse that they're there. It's more pressure because you're seeing these guys. You're reminded daily, oh, he's not practicing. They need to get something done. And so we'll see, you know, which one gets done first.
What is plural? Is that even a word? Like multiple avenues of recourse? Could you have recourses?
I guess you could have recourses, or we could just say multiple avenues of recourse.
Thank you.
Avoid the confusion.
Let me try it differently. What can a team do if they think a guy's faking an injury deep into the season? The only reason I ask is because, I don't know, never mind. But yeah, but what could they do? Like if they suspect somebody is fully healthy and he says he can't play just to try to accrue a season?
There's nothing they can do because you can't really prove it. I guess you can have the doctor check him out, but if, you know, you touch my knee and I say, ow, you know, and you can run tests and it's a mysterious injury and they just, you know, have to take the player's word for it and hope that, you know, it's a stand-up guy and, you know, of character and that he's not doing that.
That was kind of my thought and my, I guess, curiosity, though, was what's to prevent him? It does give him the ability, I feel like, to just keep saying he's hurt. Like, you can accrue a season on injured reserve, go from PUP to IR, right?
Yeah, you could do that for sure. But then, like, what kind of leverage does that give him? Nothing really, you know what I mean? If you're on IR, I mean, now you can be brought back from it. But I don't think that we'll see him drag it out like that. I mean, I guess you never say never, but I think sooner or later they're going to get this thing done before the start of the season, because they know they need him out there and they can't, you know, be messing around and have this thing dragging out longer.
Mike, thank you as always, buddy. Have a great weekend.
All right, see you guys.
Hit that normal 53 team, the regular old Washington football team. What are they called? That's the name of it. Our buddy Michael Phillips, Richmond, down in Richmond. 910 The Fan is what I meant to say very clearly. This McLaurin thing is hanging over everybody's head. When does it turn, do you think, to maybe some fans, maybe teammates, maybe kind of folks there on the inside going, okay, dude, enough is enough? Or does that ever happen?
I don't know, because this is such a unique one, because it just feels like there's so much pro-Terry momentum. Like, right, I just feel like in a normal athlete contract dispute, 75% of people line up behind the team. That's just the way it is. You know, we can break down the psychology of that. It just feels like that is not the case here. Like, there are people lining up behind the team, and certainly with that little push with the Adam Schefter thing earlier this week. But I feel like on the whole, people largely have Terry's side. I think the only thing that would swing that, I think the DK Metcalf number is the number here, the 32. The only thing that would swing it would be if we can definitively learn that he was offered that number or more and turned it down. I think that's the only change in the process here.
I like Jalen Lane. He had a great practice today. The Virginia Tech product continues to stand out. Can't wait to see him in the preseason. I know you were high on him when I talked to you about a week ago. What have you liked that you've seen from the kid?
Well, he's a free player on the roster too, right? Because he's there as the returner. And you know, kicker and punt returns are going to be more important than ever in the NFL this year. They're estimating 60% of the kicks are going to be returned. That's way up from 30 last year because of the change in the rules. So you need a full-time returner. It's not optional anymore. He's really good at that, by the way. You watched him fielding the punts the other day. He's smooth. He's got a good burst, good speed. So you have him for that. he's a free player. Put some packages together for him, get him out 2-3 times a game, have him run some stuff at receiver. I love the idea of being able to mix up your roster without also costing you a roster spot on game day. I do. I like his speed. I don't think he's overwhelmingly great at any aspect of being a receiver, but he's solid. He's good.
I ran into a buddy today in the neighborhood, and he was saying Dante Fowler was an afterthought last year, and he had double-digit sacks. Why couldn't Von Miller, not an afterthought in this scheme and system where he's going to have opportunity to rush the passer, why couldn't he do that? And I said, you know what? I'm going to ask somebody that, and I'm choosing to ask you, Michael.
Grant, when I wasn't wiping sweat off my brow out there at practice with you, you know, what I was doing was watching Von Miller. And Danny, you're going to love this guy. I mean, he just the way he works, the way he prepares, he's practicing like he's there to, like, win his roster spot, which he doesn't have to do, obviously. Just I love the professionalism, the approach. I think the only question is, how many snaps is the right number of snaps for him? He shouldn't be out there 100% of the time. Bobby Wagner's going to have this question too. What's the right number of snaps to have them out there to make sure they can be impactful in the third quarter, in the fourth quarter with the game on the line? If you tell me he's going to play 70% of the snaps, I'm willing to join you in that prediction. I don't know, is that too high of a number though? It might be at this stage of his career.
Who have we not talked enough about as a local media that you think is either super important or after the preseason we will be?
Matt Gay, kicker. I don't think we're realizing how important it is to have a kicker who can convert beyond 50 yards. It's just something that they haven't had here in a long time, that reliability. And I mentioned kickoffs going to the 35 right now. There are the touchbacks going to the 35 now. You're essentially 2 first downs away from field goal range at any given time on an NFL field now. It's more important than ever to be able to convert those points, to turn that into 3, to not send the ball the other way. I really like investing and investing big at that position, being really good at it.
What does success look like for Javon Kinlaw this year?
Javon Kinlaw, you know, I mean, that's the one. I'm very skeptical of him coming in. He kind of flopped with the Jets, and it didn't really impress with the Niners. I think John Allen's the bar, right? You got rid of John Allen, you bring him in. I think that's ultimately the comparison that's going to be made here, whether that's fair or not. You know, it's tough to evaluate those positions with sacks, right? I've always thought Deron Payne's best seasons have not been his high sack total seasons. It's when he's swallowing up double teams, making all the running backs kick to the outside. And then, you know, it's up to those guys to finish the job. But at his best, he does that. Kinlaw's got a little bit more of a get upfield, get to the quarterback as he's playing the run to him. But I think just being better against the run overall as a unit. When he's in there, can they be better against the run than they were last year? Because let's call this what it was. They were not good enough against the run last year, especially late in the season.
Michael, thank you, buddy. We appreciate you.
Take care, boys.
That is your Beltway Blitz on the teams you care the most about. By the way, all of our training camp coverage on The Fan throughout the month is presented by Paul Henry's Window Installation. PaulHenry'sWindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. 6 hours of hearings yesterday on the Commander's Stadium. Eric Flack was on site. We're going to hear exactly what happened yesterday and get his prediction for what goes down tomorrow. There is a first of 2 votes by the city council on the stadium deal tomorrow. A huge day. We'll talk to Flack about that next. Brandon Coleman, left guard for your Commanders. Second year, third round pick, going to be on the show at 5:45. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan. Our camp coverage today continuing, presented by Paul Henry's Window Installation. PaulHenry'sWindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. Let's go to the Rude Guest Hotline and talk to our buddy Eric Flack of Channel 9, the award-winning reporter who's been covering everything going on with the stadium. Commanders trying to land a deal to bring RFK 2.0 to fruition. Root is the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. So, Eric, we appreciate a couple of minutes. Thank you. I know, speaking of minutes, you spent a lot of them at the hearings yesterday. 6 hours,
man,
of basically interrogating team president Mark Klaus. So I think had a 10-minute break to go to the bathroom at some point. Give us some of the details. What actually happened over those 6 hours?
Well, I think that the mayor and the team president got a pretty good grilling from the council members who are skeptical. I think headline issues that took up the most back and forth in a negative to the stadium light are transportation issues, as well as parking structures and labor agreements, and whether or not the entire RFK site is going to be a pro-union site. All of these sound maybe really boring to an average Commanders fan. They're all really important to whether this RFK deal gets approved tomorrow in the initial vote. There were some concessions made by the Commanders both before the hearing as well as kind of on the fly as it relates to maybe putting the pause button on the third of the three parking garages, which neighbors really don't want because they think it's ugly. There are commitments now to invest in increased transportation and metro. The one outstanding issue that has not been resolved is that union issue in which the mayor sides with the Commanders as far as not wanting a requirement that all jobs related to the stadium development, as well as other RFK developments on the property, as well as the people who work in those developments, are union workers. Right now,
who's fighting for that?
The mayor, there are council members who are pro-labor who want blanket agreements that union labor only will be used. There are union groups that are that were there in person that are advocating for labor requirement, union requirements, I should say, to be used. The mayor's argument is that unions, which are regional, not local to D.C., tend to bring in out of D.C. workers. So she says she goes to work sites all the time, filled with workers with Virginia license plates, Maryland license plates with jobs. So the idea is union jobs don't always benefit D.C. residents. The other side is that union jobs protect workers, and that's an issue that has not been resolved because that's one that the Commanders, I've been told, are not really going to budge on. But yeah, it was a grilling, and I think that the temperature rose more between the mayor and council members than Mark Klaus. Mark, the Commanders president, Mark Klaus, if you know him and have had any interaction with him, he's great. He's good in a room. He works a room really well. He came from a really high power job at Campbell Foods. He's the guy who, by his own admission, put two flavors in Oreos, like literally. He's good at his job, and he keeps the temperature low. Any conflict was between the mayor and D.C. Council. But it was two rounds of questioning, a lot of grilling, a lot of hard questions, and some issues not resolved.
So, long way of saying here, where do we stand? What does it mean for what's next? The vote tomorrow, then, you know, more votes later if it passes, to kind of, you know, what's the temperature? You mentioned kind of the what's going on in the room, but just in general with the council, and where do us little peons stand with stadium stuff?
The vote is at, the session starts at noon tomorrow, first vote. They have five votes. They need eight. One little nugget I have for you all is that I was on the phone. I've been calling people down there at City Hall, talking to, you know, my sources within the staff of various council members. And this was a conversation with high-ranking staff member of a council member who is pro-stadium. And he's like, how do you think this is going to go? And I said, well, why are you asking me? I think I need to ask. I was calling to ask you how you think it's going to go. And he was like, well, let's count votes. And I'm like, what do you mean count votes? I thought you're counting votes. Well, I'm supposed to be asking you. The point being, I was a little bit surprised that the people behind this deal are still counting votes up there. The mayor was asked after this marathon session yesterday whether she has the votes. She said yes. When asked to elaborate or specify, she declined to do so. And she said, well, I don't want to do it before the deal is done. I have been told that Council Chair Mendelson, who is the guy who updated the mayor's deal and got almost $800 million additional funding over 30 years back from the commander's revenue back from the original deal, I've been told that he is confident. So you hear a lot of "I'm confident." You don't hear a lot of people who can say, okay, the three extra votes that we need are X, Y, and Z. I think they're at seven. I think it's that eighth vote, which they only need because of some tax implications, two-thirds majority as opposed to a simple majority. It's that eighth vote that I think people don't know where it's going to come from yet.
So who... You don't know the names, I guess, but like we know the four from the beginning. Mendelson would be five. Who would you guess are the other two? And who is adamantly opposed? I know Nadeau is like, if we need to spend a penny, we're not doing it. Yep. Other than her, are there like hard and fast no's that you could tell from the hearings are clearly just not on board?
We have Charles Allen in the leaning no category. Charles Allen, big transportation guy. I've known him for a long time. Has long been an anti-stadium, let's not use the land for a stadium guy. But he's also a smart guy and can read a room. And there are those who believe he will ultimately vote yes. But, and I asked him yesterday when I spoke with him, I have been guilty of saying you're a no vote and never stadium vote. Are you moderating at all? And he kind of said, well, no, I mean, we're trying to get the best deal we can. He kind of says, well, I'm a no vote, but he also acknowledges that he's trying to get a good deal for the city. So, you know, if you're trying to get a good deal for the city, you seem like you're open to it in some way, shape, or form. I mean, Nadeau is checked out. She wasn't even there. She didn't even take part in the hearing. Allen is very engaged. The two
– She didn't even go to the hearing on it?
She did not. Cool. She did not. She's out. And she reposted, the Washington Post editorial board came out today and put out an article saying that they oppose the stadium as well. And she reposted that.
Editorial board opposed the stadium.
The Post editorial board today put out a long piece saying it's corporate welfare and they wanted to come to D.C. anyway. So why are we giving them all these tax dollars when they were wanting to be there anyway, and it's a sweet sight, and you know it's not a good enough deal. The other two votes, I think, in my opinion, are Christina Henderson and Janice Lewis-George. Christina Henderson has been very quiet, but she's been attending everything. She has been deep discussions with the commanders for a long time. I think that's one. Janice Lewis-George had questions about labor. And used her questioning about the union issue yesterday, but seemed to be satisfied with the answers that she got. And then you're looking at Zachary Parker, Robert White, and Matthew Fruman. If Allen is a no, you have Zachary Parker, Robert White, and Matthew Fruman to be that eighth vote. Zachary Parker is hard publicly that there needs to be a union deal, like he's posting on social media. So he would be at a complete about phase. Robert White has been hard questioning, and if he votes for it, would also seem to be a public about face. And I always question whether politicians will do an about face when it will make them not look great. And they're not going to get what they want, right? It's not like they're going to get their demands met. And so then that leaves Matthew Fruman, who has told me that he wants to help out the commanders. It's like he wants the deal, but he has been big on it's moving too fast. That's his thing. It's moving too fast, I can't adjust the details. It's moving too fast. And I just wonder whether he will blow up the whole deal thing over. This has moved too fast for me.
So, Eric, let me jump in here real quick. Yep. Got about a minute left, but we know that if they vote yes, then there's another vote on September 17th. They'll come back and they've got to do it again, and things could change and the vote could go differently. If they don't actually get it passed, though, if the vote is no tomorrow, then what?
Well, then they can always bring it back again. It's not like you know, you're in a court of law where you get found not guilty of a crime and they can never retry you.
Got it. They could vote again in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I think what would be much more likely is they just keep on going round and round and round until they get some sort of a deal. The question tomorrow is, do they change the deal to get an agreement so much that the commanders then are not, they're like, well, that's not the deal we agreed to. All of this is going to play out tomorrow.
Eric, thank you as always, man. Informative and dizzying at the same time.
Yeah. You got that?
Yes,
I think
got
so.
It. That's the best. Right. Thank you, Eric. Always good. You can see why he wins the awards for the reporting over at Channel 9. Tomorrow's going to be unbelievable. I'm thinking about going over there because I think it's pretty public. Like sitting in
I think
and watching
it's at
them
noon.
Vote, just booing people that don't vote for this thing. I'm kidding.
But kind of, right?
No,
can't you do
I
that?
Mean, I don't know. You can probably do a lot of things. I'm not going to be one of them. You could stand up and try to fight the commissioner, too. That's not really my cup of tea.
Don't do that either, yeah. If you're taking notes. But it's not quite like British Parliament, where someone's like, recognize the man from Yorkshire. And someone's like, oh, I think they should vote for it. Boo, down with him. I mean, they do that.
How about Nadu not even showing up?
I'm telling you. Like, I will take that. Like, it's not necessarily what I agree with, that's your stance, man. You're not even participating.
She's like, I'm not interested in this. Don't bother me about it.
I got some stuff to do.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. We do have Brandon Coleman coming up in 1 hour at 5:45. The Major League Baseball trade deadline is at 6. It's an hour and 15 minutes out. Nats expected to trade Josh Bell between now and then. Would be surprising if they didn't. Are they going to trade Mackenzie Gore? We're going to find out. Let's get to the NFL and some burning questions next. Coming up at 5 o'clock in about 10 minutes, Jaden Daniels met with the media today. He said there's a night and day difference between how he feels, how he thinks he looks on the practice field from this time a year ago, which should be scary for other teams to hear after the season he put together. Where can he grow the most, and what is realistic to expect from him this coming year? We'll talk about that to kick off next hour. Brandon Coleman at 5:45, and we'll be monitoring the Nats at the trade deadline as well. Still no news on Josh Bell or Mackenzie Gore with about an hour and 10 minutes to go. But it is time to get some NFL burning questions from our producer, Dad Dameron. We'll go around the league with him. What'd you cook up over there, Dad?
All righty. Let's start at the top. Here we got the Jaguars are entering the 2025 season with a new head coach in Liam Cohen. They've got Travis Hunter coming in. Buy or sell an AFC South team overtaking the Houston Texans in 2025?
I buy this because you're basically saying the field or Houston. Now, Houston on paper is the best team in that division, right? They are. But it's not like they're a juggernaut. They're not like a buzzsaw. To me, somebody might jump up and beat them. Again, I wouldn't bet on any one of the three teams to do it. I don't really trust the Colts with their quarterback situation. I don't really trust the Jags. I certainly, not terribly confident that Tennessee is going to get right all of a sudden, but we're basically saying the field or a three straight time division winner with that nothing will go wrong. I'll take the field.
Yeah, I would sell this. I don't love the Texans, but they're better than the other teams. They got the best quarterback in CJ Stroud. I'll bet on them for that reason. I liked taking Jaden Higgins in the second round of the draft at receiver to go with Nico Collins. Remember, they have Christian Kirk who came over via trade from Jacksonville, actually. And they added two offensive linemen. Left tackle Cam Robinson replaced Tunsil. Lakin Tomlinson, the guard from Seattle at left guard. So they could be a little bit better up front as well, which was a big deal. So I think they're a 10-7 team-ish, but they win that division narrowly. I do think Jacksonville will be better. Tennessee's going to be better. Indy could be sneaky fun, too, if Daniel Jones beats out Anthony Richardson. but Texans by a hair in that division.
The Minnesota Vikings are turning the keys over to second-year quarterback J.J. McCarthy. And it looks like the books have their over-under set at 8.5 wins. What are you taking? Over or under on 8.5 wins for the Minnesota Vikings in 2025?
Over. I was high on the Vikings last year going into the season. I'm high on them again this year. They have arguably the best defensive coordinator in the league in Brian Flores, and they added John Allen and Javon Hargrave up front to one of the best defenses in the sport. They brought in Isaiah Rodgers from Philly and Jeff Okuda from Houston in the secondary to already a pretty good secondary. And then on offense, it's Jefferson, Addison, Naylor. They drafted Ty Felton from Maryland. They have three new starters on their offensive line that gets better seemingly every single season. They ran the ball better last year, and they'll add to Aaron Jones with Jordan Mason. Still have Ty Chandler. J.J. McCarthy is the big question, but I'm a Kevin O'Connell believer. I think they will take a lot of pressure off McCarthy. It's going to feel like Michigan. I think 9 wins is a safe bet. If you told me they're either going to win 7 or 10, I would say 10. I think that's a really good defense. Really good football team, exceptional coaching staff.
Darius, let's say I was worthy. We know that I am not, but let's say that I was worthy.
And Xavier worthy.
I could pick up Thor's hammer, Mjolnir. I would hammer the over on this one. Several reasons. Grant already mentioned it. Kevin O'Connell, we're going to start talking about him pretty soon among the best coaches of the NFL. I think that's, you know, if he ever gets a Super Bowl, that'll sort of cement that, but we need to start thinking of him as one of the elite guys. I also love their schedule. I think they're going to start 4-1 and then kind of go 500 or better the rest of the way. They will go way past that over, in my opinion.
Kevin O'Connell was here at one point. That was fun.
Would have been nice.
The Raiders extended their left tackle, Colton Miller, earlier this week. Buy or sell the Raiders being in the wild card mix in the AFC playoff race?
Sell. They are a hot buttered mess. Whoever talks to Mark Davis last is what Mark Davis does. He's basically Dan Snyder without the investigations. This is a boob. This is a shoddily run organization that can't figure out which way is up. They don't know what they're doing. I think they are a disaster in a really, really tough division. They're going to win 5 games.
Sell as well. I don't think they're very good. I don't think they're as bad as you're saying, because they go get a veteran quarterback in Geno Smith. They bring in a coach who's a culture changer in Pete Carroll. It's not going to be a dumpster fire, to use your parlance, but Ashton Gentry's going to make some plays. Raheem Mostert is going to score some touchdowns. I worry about the receiving core. It's still Jacoby Myers and what exactly? So there's just not enough talent there. That's a 7-10 team probably.
Reports out of Saints camp says that their quarterback room is struggling. Will the Saints have the worst record in the NFL?
I actually think so. Yeah, I think this is like a 3-14, 4-13 team. They have a bad quarterback situation, but they're going to be set up to get the number one quarterback in this coming year's draft. I don't see anybody with a worse record than them. And they're doing it finally correctly, by the way. They spun their tires 7-8 wins for years and years and years. They are allowing the bottom to fall out. This is what they should do.
I think someone else ends up with a worse record, but they'll be in contention for it. As you said, they've been in salary cap purgatory or hell, whatever you want to call it, for several years. Now, finally, the plane has crashed into the mountain. They're going to be a disaster.
Jaden Daniels was at the mic today. Let's localize the football banter next on Grant and Danny.